The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Mino Studio is a pre- and post-production facility for all of your audio needs. Mino Studio's founder is an accredited audio engineer with top 40 and indie album credits. With over 30 years of music industry experience, Mino Studio can take your podcast from idea to reality. Contact Mino Studio at MinoStudio777@gmail.com for more information. That's Mino Studio spelled M-E-N-O, MinoStudio777@gmail.com.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we have a great show for you today. This is a real neat guy who started investing as a full-time W-2 employee, and over time has grown his real estate portfolio significantly, and is also sharing a lot of what he's learning and has done on his own podcast. His name is Lane Kawaoka. He's the host of Simple Passive Cash Flow Podcast, available on iTunes and all those other places where you can find podcasts. And he's an avid real estate investor, still full-time W-2 employee as a civil engineer. And he's got a master's degree as well as an engineer who got started young with passive real estate investing. He owns 11 single-family homes in Birmingham, Atlanta, Indianapolis, and Pennsylvania. And as he slowly builds his single-family home portfolio, Lane realized the single-family homes was not going to get him to his cash flow goals, much as I realized that too. Interesting. And he was creating a job for himself to manage the manager. Today, Lane podcasts at simplepassivecashflow.com to help newbies to get into real estate and helps more sophisticated investors get into larger multifamily syndications that Lane puts together. Well, Lane, welcome to the Old Dogs Network here. How are you?
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Doing great. I really love your story. There's a lot more to it, and I just kind of gave a brief overview. But why don't you just kind of tell us your background and how you specifically went from engineer to real estate investor?
So I graduated from the University of Washington with a bachelor's in industrial engineering. And then I went to work at this job where I was traveling all the time. Didn't have a primary residence, so I was able to save a lot of money. So I bought that first home because that's what everybody said to do. Because I was traveling all the time, I was only home on Saturday, so I decided to rent it out. And then I realized, like, wow, I was making a lot of money doing this. So then I just started reading all the books, bought another duplex, and then I kind of came to a point where I just started to look into these different properties outside of Seattle, because Seattle is such a kind of a bad investment market in terms of cash flow. So then I went out of state and went to all those other places, Birmingham, Atlanta, Indy. And that's kind of where I'm at right now, doing little different things and working on the podcast and I guess all sorts of things, working a W-2 job.
That's exciting. Now, did you have a bunch of funds that you just started buying the homes, or did you sort of fund it, you know, maybe start off a little bit with, you know, your savings and what have you, and then continue to purchase based on your income, or how does that work with you?
So I'm super cheap, and I was even cheap 10 years ago when I got out of college. That Millionaire Next Door book mindset was definitely something I followed. So I was able to save probably about $30,000 to $50,000 a year, which, you know, got me to get that first rental property. I guess that was my primary residence first, but just that was kind of my my driving backing at that point.
So as you continue to work, you're just investing the money that you're saving to purchase new properties. Is that right?
That's right. And then once I bought a few of them, then I could buy two a year. And then it just kind of escalated from there.
Now, are you leveraging the properties as well? So as they go up in value, you do cash out refis?
I haven't held on to the properties that long to see that great of appreciation yet. But as soon as I saved, you know, another 25, 30 grand, I just bought another property. That was kind of the mindset. I've utilized some 1031s in the process. Traded a couple of Seattle properties for about 9 properties I bought in a 6-month period. And that was kind of one of the biggest moves I made recently.
Getting out of the properties, I'm thinking that you must be in great markets because you have to sell them fairly quickly to be able to get the funds all at the same time to purchase new properties. Has that been difficult in terms of selling them at the price that you want?
Well, I mean, that's the good and the bad is, you know, Seattle's an appreciation market. And I realized that pretty early that you can be an appreciation investor, which is I call gambler, or a cash flow investor, which is kind of like a blue chip investor. And they're different. And most investors are appreciation investors, which I don't think is the right way to go. I think the way I see it is you have to build a pyramid with the cash flowing rentals on the bottom. And these are conservative in your secondary markets, like the Birmingham, Atlantas, and Indies. Get a bunch of those, and then you can go after more appreciation plays like land deals or flipping and that sort of stuff that you hear about all the time.
I think most of us in the Old Dog Network are looking at cash flow as number one, really buying on cash flow. If you get the appreciation, great, and you can definitely leverage it when you do. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think trying to be a land speculator or property speculator is a little risky. And although people do it and do it real well, successfully, I'm like, yeah, I tend to lean more toward the conservative side on that. What moved you into real estate? I mean, you know, you grew up in Hawaii, right? And studying engineering, moving in that direction. Was it really just buying your first property and looking at how that appreciated and got you interested? How did you really look at real estate investing as a serious enterprise?
Well, at first I just thought that you had to buy a property, a primary residence, and that's how you kind of build equity. And I believed in all this dogma about, you know, you need to own your home, you need to, you know, stop wasting your money on rent, which I totally debunked later on. I'm actually renting today and it's the greatest thing ever. But, you know, once I saw that I was making this much money for rent and a lot less was the mortgage, and I was making the profit on the delta, I was like, wow, this is like, I got to learn more about this stuff and optimize this.
Well, I don't know if you've ever read the book that we all read, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But, you know, the idea of looking at assets in a different mindset. you know, as you become a real estate investor, I think looking at everything is like, you know, guy, you know, can I justify buying a car? Because, you know, unless I'm an Uber driver on the side or something, you know, it's one of those assets that, you know, it's not generating anything for you. Kind of have that mindset.
I don't think I read that book till like 2012 or 11, like pretty, once I was definitely on the road to getting that second rental. But once I read it, I was like, wow, yeah, no wonder everybody was talking about this book.
Great book. It definitely inspired me. At least it got me thinking in a different way in terms of, you know, investments and assets and so forth. As far as moving into, you know, the investing side of it, you had been an investor, right, prior to investing in real estate just through the market or through money market funds?
Yeah, I spent a little time doing stock investments, not the day trading, but more like swing trading. You know, holding on to stocks for anywhere from a day to a few weeks or a few months doing that. And I wasted a lot of time doing that. I came home and watched CNN, you know, watched all those fast money shows. And it was just so stressful and I couldn't get it. And then kind of the tipping point was the day before earnings, I bought Microsoft of all stocks and it like bombed like 15%. And I was like, what the heck? Yeah, you can make money with it, but like, what kind of a lifestyle is this? And you can't even predict this stuff. I mean, it makes you think that you have the insider knowledge before all these other people who are doing it.
And that's, I think, the appeal for most of us real estate investors is that you really can control a lot of what you generate and what you're going to yield in those investments. I mean, granted, there are market changes and fluctuations just like there is in Wall Street. But at the same time, I think your odds of being able to control, especially as you move into the multifamily arena, you have a lot more control on what you're going to produce.
All right. What I like about, you know, real estate investing, especially the apartment stuff, is you're creating value, real value. I mean, turnkeys, you know, yeah, I guess you're giving a product, but apartments, you're actually increasing the value of someone's, you know, a lot of these properties where, you know, stock trading and all these Wall Street jobs, I mean, what value are you creating? I mean, it's kind of like a, you know, one of those arbitrator guys on Amazon who sells and buys and sells, you know, items. I mean, what value is that?
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head. They're really, what do you have besides a, you know, a piece of paper? And behind that paper is a lot of things that you don't know and you can't control. And you really rely on other people's feedback as to what, you know, that company is going to do or what that asset's going to do. And when you buy real estate, I mean, it's a commodity that is, it's not going anywhere. Historically, it's so much more solid. What I'm noticing is interesting as you're talking to me too, you obviously made a big push and you were going towards single family homes. Was it a recent decision that really brought you into the multifamily arena? I mean, what kind of motivated that shift?
Yeah, so I was doing that 1031 exchange and I quickly picked up 9 properties. And at that point, you know, maybe we're just getting the property stabilized with new property management. So we're kind of training the tenants a little bit. But, you know, I realized pretty quickly that my goal to get 20 or 30 of these single family homes was like not what I wanted to do. I mean, I was getting a call, you know, every week with, you know, something going wrong. I mean, it was not like it was taking more than an hour or two to deal with it. But, you know, you can imagine getting 30 or 40, 50 of these properties. I was like, this is not cool. And of course, it's, you know, you can't really listen to any of the people selling you the properties because they don't know. They're not investors. You know, it's kind of a small niche of people who own more than one investment property. I guess it's first world problems. But I mean, that's why I moved to multifamily, because it's infinitely scalable. You just have to learn how to network with other people to find the right deals and right people to work with.
And looking at a 1031 exchange, I mean, you have a very small window there. I mean, how much time did you have to find and buy 9 properties?
I believe you have 6 months to close on all your properties. But the hardest thing is, you know, buying these turnkey properties, the inventory kind of flies off the shelf. So you have 45 days to identify which homes you could possibly be going after. So that's the real constraint there, is that 45-day period.
And you're financing these properties as well, right? Or are you just buying them for cash?
I totally do not agree with buying cash. I always finance.
Yeah, good. I think that's a smart move. That's part of one of the wonderful benefits of real estate investing is what you get out of that that mortgage that's involved there, and as well as leverage and a lot of other things. But no, that's a smart move. But working full time and trying to buy that number of homes and do all the financing and the due diligence involved with each property, that to me just sounds mind-boggling to be able to coordinate that in that short time period.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be organized. You have to have systems, file structures in your computer. I mean, I don't use any fax machines.
That's good. I don't think I've used a fax. I don't have a fax, but I guess I could figure out how to do it with my scanner, but I don't know. I haven't really done it. But, as you've gotten involved here too, and it sounds like you've got some track record here and some history, where did you really feel like, oh man, I just really blew it? That was sort of your big mistake in the investment arena.
I guess early on when I had that first rental property, I remember taking a $30,000 check to go pay down the mortgage. And I walked over to the bank and I gave it to the teller and I told him, well, I want to make a payment to principal. And realizing that was, what we were all told to do is to pay down debt. But how silly that was now in hindsight. I mean, that was one of the key principal mistakes that I made early on.
Why?
Because the asset is not the home. It's really the debt that you have on that on that property. I mean, that cheap 4%, 5% loan, it's going to be a lot more valuable to you in the future, 30 years from now, when you're paying off that property. Because that $100,000 house now, I mean, to buy something equivalent in Birmingham 30 years from now is probably going to be like $500,000 for all we know. And you're paying it off with tomorrow's money.
Right. I kind of already asked this, but the idea of, shifting from single family to multifamily, did you also see the benefit there in terms of the asset itself?
Yeah, I think as an investor, you start to build up your cash flow. As I said, like that pyramid thing, once you get about $3,000 to $4,000 of passive cash flow, you can start to start asking yourself, what's the goal here? What am I trying to accomplish? I mean, for most people, all they want is about $5,000 to $8,000 of passive cash flow. And at that point, they can probably transition to getting a few more single family homes, not 20 of them, but maybe going in as a passive investor for some of these syndication deals. But for me personally, because my goal was to quit my job and do something with my life, because I had a realization that, yeah, I get 10 to 20 homes and I can quit my job, but then what the heck would I do? Like, how would I fill up my day with something meaningful? And I thought I saw a path for myself to become an apartment syndication lead, because a lot of people contact me about all the turnkey rental stuff, but they don't have the time. They have the money. They have a lot more money than they know what to do with it. And that syndication stuff is like the perfect thing for them. So if I can create value for others, then that's what was my goal for me, and just to kind of fill my time in the next decades to come, to be honest.
Well, I think too, after you, even with turnkey properties, you get those calls, the heater's not working. We had somebody stole the AC unit. This happened or that happened. And I know that just the few single family homes that I've owned, if I multiply that by 30 or 50 or 100 or, 1,000 homes, I mean, that would be just insane to manage. And whereas if I had, 300 unit apartment buildings, and which is roughly the same number, it's so much easier to manage in terms of just looking at one property and dealing with those issues, as opposed to these multiple properties, personalities, tenants, and all the other things that are involved in single family homes.
Right, like with my 10 properties, if I have, I'll probably have an eviction maybe once a year, maybe twice. But if you, you know, 3x that, you're talking about an eviction every single month or every other month, definitely every quarter. We all know how those with single family, I mean, those evictions are always different. And they always seem to be a lot more troublesome than apartment evictions. And apartment evictions, I mean, it seems like you always have an extra layer in there with that property management company that are much more sophisticated than these other single family home property management companies.
It's true. It looks like you're in some good states, though, as far as landlord-tenant laws. I know that, you know, dealing with Memphis and Atlanta, that they're pretty favorable to the landlord, which is great. But there are some places, California would be crazy. I know some people that have been trying to evict somebody and get them out of their property, and they're working on a year. The person's been living there rent-free. I mean, there's some places it's just horrible to try and deal with those issues.
Yeah, I mean, if you're investing in California or any West Coast or East Coast state, you already got problems as it is with no cash flow. But I think the only secondary market that most of the other investors are going to is tenant landlord wise is Chicago. That seems to be the big troublesome one.
That's what I've heard too. Yeah, I think that the biggest areas, population areas, that tend to have the toughest laws. It seems like.
Yeah, the blue states are usually the harder ones to work with.
You're looking at apartments. Have you purchased any apartments yet?
We are working on one now. It's a pretty big project. But I'm always looking for the next deal. That's the hardest thing to find. And, you know, always looking to help others out. If you guys have a property that you want me to analyze through my spreadsheet, I'll let you know what I think. And, I mean, I'll come and fund the deal if you need it, too.
Wow. Is that an offer for our members here, our network?
Yeah, but as long as it's more than 60 units, because, I mean, you and I have kind of had the discussion. If it's not more than 60 units, it's not worth the time, in my opinion.
It's true. I actually think 100 plus is a safer bet. But, I understand. It's true. It really is. There's that economy of scale that just kicks in, I think, at that point that really makes a difference on whether or not it's worth the investment or not.
Right. 60 units is usually the crossover point where you have an actual property manager in the building at all times. And then the way I usually look at this stuff is it's your competition. You know, if you stay above $2 million purchase price, you stay away from all these other mom and pop investors. And, you know, it's a lot easier to win when there's a lot less competition.
Yeah. Although finding apartments that are owned by mom and pops, those are some of the best ones you can find because they've been running it for 20 years and you can step in and really make a difference to upgrade that property and the management. But those are hard to find too at the same time.
Right. We're not looking for the average deal. We're looking for the deal of the century, kind of that property got ran into the ground.
You got it. Well, that brings up a good question too. You're working full time. How are you even able to look for deals?
It's difficult. I mean, you have to, they always say go on LoopNet, build relationships with all the brokers. I mean, it just takes time and it's kind of just a brute guerrilla force kind of attitude. You just got to keep doing it. Things will happen.
Now, do you have a pretty strong team of brokers out there and boots on the ground in the areas that you're interested in?
I mean, I've got some contacts with the single family network that I built, which there's some crossover, but a lot of the times with these brokers, you just have to keep top of mind. You just have to keep contacting with them and building those relationships. That's the difficult part. It's not raising the money. It's not the deal. It's the finding the deal.
Yeah. And it's just so true. You're trying to find the right numbers that make sense too, and it is competitive out there. It's getting more competitive, so you have to look a little bit harder and spend a little bit more time, you know, trying to uncover those diamonds in the rough. Well, you know, we have an audience that is generally, you know, 50 plusers, people that are approaching retirement or already in retirement, and they're really looking seriously at real estate investing as a means to be able to augment the funds that they have allocated for their for their retirement. And what advice would you have for them in terms of getting started? What should they do to, you know, to get into this and to be able to do it right?
Well, first thing I would do would be contact someone like yourself or me or someone who actually does real estate investing and have an open discussion about, you know, hey, what's your war chest? How much do you have to work with? You know, how much is your equity in your home? Because that's all fair game. I mean, I think real estate is the best investment. I don't have any 401k or any stocks. I got all of that stuff a couple years ago.
That's smart. Yeah. That's a, you know, one thing I did as an investor in the stock market for years, and it was good for me and it worked out well. But you know, recently with so many different fluctuations and prediction by some of the top economists that the market's really going to take a downturn here, I moved everything into a self-directed IRA, and it's just been sitting there. And I'm going, gee, you know, unless I get that into, you know, real estate, it's just not going to earn me anything. So I'm real motivated to do that. But I'm with you. I think real estate investing is about the best place you could be right now, especially if we have a downturn.
Right. I mean, my dad's a baby boomer. And, you know, if I know anything about baby boomers, maybe just because I'm younger, nobody listens to anybody.
So true.
Everybody, you know, everybody has money their whole life. So everybody thinks that they're a financial advisor. Everybody thinks that they know how to do real estate. But how long have you been doing it? If you've been doing that long, are you really that good at it?
There's really a need for strong mentors. Anybody that's going to get into this, to have people there that can direct them, give them good advice, and more than one source too, because there will be different opinions between two people that are equally experienced. So it's a good idea to have access to that information. Well, what about your current business? What is your goal? Where do you want to go with all of this?
So I have the podcast and the blog, which I've been kind of writing in there. Kind of my main mission is to get people out of the stock market. I mean, my parents were highly educated. They have like master's and doctorate, but they worked their whole careers. Actually, they still do. And they still don't get to go on the vacations or buy the cars that they want. And I blame the stock market. I mean, that 8 to 10% that they got every year. I mean, who? All those other Wall Street guys are probably taking at least half of that away from them, that in fees. So my mission with the podcast is to show people that regular people can do it too. You don't need to get 10. You don't need to get 5. Just get a couple and try it out. And it's a way, way better investment in terms of return. I mean, total returns, you're probably making 25 to 35% with some of these turnkey rentals. I mean, take that 8% at the stock market.
Oh, it's true. It's so true. Yeah. I mean, I talked to somebody who just got a 30% cash on cash on a property that they purchased. And people are still making amazing returns in real estate. And you just can't compare that to the market. I mean, if you get 8 to 10 in the market, good for you. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I always try and cater my advice to professionals or, you know, people with money. I mean, I don't have the time to go find that diamond and rough single family home that can give me those, like you said, the 30 to 50 or infinite returns, as they say. I mean, I like to find people who have been financially stable and responsible their entire lives, but have been let down by the stock market. And I can't help you if you have no money or no credit or no job. I mean, I know there's different ways you can do real estate, like wholesaling, but I would like to cater to those who have kind of suffered and need to see the light with this turnkey rentals or other passive investments.
It's even possible for folks to, you know, to get one property, and that property can be a great income for them. So it just depends, you know, on what you're looking at. But I've known folks that have done that, just found a real nice cash flowing property, and boom, that supplies what they need. So it just depends on what you're looking for.
Right. I mean, it just takes about $20,000 to $30,000, and you can buy a $100,000 property. And then once you do that, you buy one the next year. And then after a few of those, you can, now you're buying two, and you're definitely on that path to financial freedom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I purchased, and this is not uncommon in Indianapolis, a duplex for $50,000. And it's producing right now, you know, $1,300 a month in income. And, you know, that's just one little property. And to get into to $50,000, you know, especially if you finance it, just a very small down payment. And, you know, with great interest and so forth and other things that you can write off, it's a smart investment. And there aren't a lot of places you can do that.
Right.
Well, we're at the point in our interview. I could keep talking to you, Elaine, because I think you have some great ideas and some great input here. But this is our wrap it up section. And I ask you a series of real quick questions, and you just kind of give me your response as best you can. Are you ready to get started here?
Ready to go.
All right. Let's start with the first question. Favorite real estate book?
The Millionaire Investor. I think that's Gary Keller.
Yeah, it is Gary Keller. Yeah, great book. How about favorite business book?
4-Hour Workweek, Tim Ferriss.
Another favorite of mine, too. How about your favorite quote?
Things don't happen to you, but for you. Things happen for a reason. That's Tony Robbins.
Oh, cool. All right. How about your most valuable website for success other than your own?
Google. All right, if you don't know something, figure it out. That's the difference between people who crush it and people who don't do anything.
Great.
You know, I mean, how do I appeal my taxes? Well, Google it, figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people do who solve problems. Be a problem solver. Don't just sit there.
Love it. How about favorite app? Anything on your phone that helps you out?
I like to use Dropbox a lot. You know, I paid $100 for the big kid subscription and everything. You know, you get teams of people together and you share files, you know, Excel files or Google Sheets in them, and it just creates a collaboration type of atmosphere. Also like to use Facebook Messenger too a lot. Okay. Try to stay away from email as much as possible. That's kind of an archaic thing. And that's one of the reasons why I'm leaving the W-2 job is email.
Oh, really? Interesting. Wow. Okay, this question is you know, sort of a scenario. If something catastrophic happened and let's say you lost all your properties, all your money in the bank, everything except $1,000, and that's all you have, $1,000 cash. What would you do, knowing what you know, to get yourself back into the real estate investing game?
So I couldn't buy a turnkey property because you need a lot more than that. One path is to do the wholesaling route. I just have never done it, and I think it's like you're creating yourself a job. Is if I had $1,000, I would find someone like you, me, you know, another person who's kind of killing it, and just go and add value and see how you can ride on their coattails. I mean, you just have to do one deal with them and you're gonna learn so much and build so many contacts through doing that. I mean, I didn't believe in all this networking stuff. You know, I just learned it pretty recently, how powerful it is when you do it right. You know, most people will think that, I don't want to give them, you know, my time and effort. But that's like the scarcity mindset thinking. That's how most people think, and that's why they don't get anywhere. You got to have that abundance mindset, and you have to give value to people because you're going to get so much more in return.
That's great.
So you can keep your $1,000 and just get a bunch of Starbucks and just go around and add value to others.
Yeah, I think real estate, like most business, is a relationship. Your business. I mean, it really is all about relationships and the people that you know, that you meet, that you have contact with, and building upon that is really a key element in your success in real estate. Good feedback there. Great. How how can people get a hold of you, Lane? I'm sure there's a lot listening to this. I'd say, guy, yeah, I'd really love to talk to that young guy and find out some more. Do you have a way people could easily reach you here?
Yeah, send me an email at lane@simplepassivecashflow.com. Or just check me out on my website, simplepassivecashflow.com.
Of course, you just said you don't read your email, so how are they going to – no, I'm just kidding. Just giving you a hard time. I know you have to use email. But, yeah, okay, that's great. And his website is excellent. I think there's also some real neat stuff about Lane and his story too. I think you've kind of kept a briefer here, but that's real helpful, just kind of looking at where he came from and where he's going, and is also his heart to give back as well. There's a lot of neat stuff on his website. So I would encourage you to go there as well.
Yeah, I think some of your members will actually like the fact that I have a link on there. It's a Calendly link, and you can find a time in my schedule and we can talk on the phone. So I believe in talking on the phone better than texting or email.
Wow, that's old school. What are you talking about?
I know. I mean,
talking
you
on
have
the
to...
phone? I love that. That's great hearing that from a young person. Yeah,
that's all the deals are made. It's not made on Snapchat or Instagram.
Oh,
if it is, but then I'll be on those.
I got people that like messaged me across the room. You know, it's that bad. As opposed to just walking over and talking to me. So that's good to hear from you. That's great. That's nice that you're offering to meet with people there like that. That's great. That's great. Well, we come to the end of our little adventure here, and I think there's a lot of information here that I would like to expand upon. Maybe in the future, I'd love to have you back and explore that. One of the things that we do as we close out our show, all of our guests have this wonderful adventure close out with us. Listening to your howl, your best old hound dog howl. Now, I know you grew up in Hawaii. There's probably not a lot of hound dogs there. I don't know if there's any dogs. I know there's dogs there, but maybe you can just give us your best. Or were you going to give us a little bit of your own? You actually have a dog that you were going to share with us.
Yeah, he's actually a hound dog too.
Oh, really? Oh,
no. But I'm gonna attempt to imitate his bark.
Okay.
Bah! That's it. That's how he sounds. It's like a parrot.
Okay. That was pretty good. Does your dog ever howl?
No, he does not have that capability.
Come on, you got to give us at least a howl here. If he did howl, how would he howl?
Yeah. Ooh!
That was great. That was great, Lane. That works. Just play that. Get the recording. Play it for him. Maybe he'll actually start to howl. You never know.
I don't know if he has that in him.
Oh, wow. Well, Lane, it has been great. I really appreciate you for joining us. I think there's a lot of great information there. You got a great story, and I can just see just fantastic success ahead for you. I also want to thank all of you old dog listeners out there that joined us and took the time to listen today. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king, and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.